Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, it's your girl Cy Brown right here for Life Remixed Radio. Well, here we are Monday morning and the Pittsburgh Steelers have won the Super Bowl. I put out on Facebook last night that I don't know anything about football, and then I put in, you know, parenthetically speaking, which means in parentheses, maybe I should have kept that a secret, and everyone was sending me back notes. And, you know, many of you who listen to the show every day know that I have two teenagers now. But when my younger son was playing football, I literally would just cheer when all of the other parents on my side cheered and boo and curse the ref when obviously I guess something didn't go wrong. I mean, I'm not standing there yelling curses at him, but I just mean like boo or hiss or whatever it was. And I swear I didn't know anything. I think I know enough just about something happens and then that's a first down and a second down and I think you have to get four downs and then that's really where my football knowledge ceases or extends to. So I really don't know much about football. But everybody was like, Cy, you should have kept that a secret. But I was rooting for the Steelers, so I'm astute enough to know to root for the winning team. And ironically enough, they won, so that was a good thing. And I watched the interview with Matt Lauer and President Barack Obama last night, right before. It came on, I think, like 5 o'clock Eastern or something like that. And he was rooting for the Steelers, too, so that made me feel a little bit better. I'm like, okay, this is good. I'm rooting for the right team, but it's all good. I don't know. Let me just switch gears a little bit here. Did you all know that the bailed-out bank spent millions on Super Bowl festivities, Bank of America? And this is something that I was talking about with my husband, that just watching, I believe it was one of the guys, I think it was Mike Barnicle on MSNBC last week said, tickets are $1,000, hotel, airfare, food, all of these expenses for a guy that makes $30,000 a year. And that struck me as odd because that is, you know, it can probably equate to 2 or 3% of a yearly salary or even take-home salary that's spent on football. Now, of course, you know, on this show we always talk about living your absolute best life and how do we live a good life. And, of course, entertainment and fun is a major part of that. But when you look at the costs associated with football and the Super Bowl, you got to kind of wonder who's paying for all of this. So that's a question that my husband and I posed to each other last night when we were watching. And then we had, you know, our sons and, all, you know, good time was had by all. But we were asking, like, who's paying for all the security? I saw where the security and troops, and they each actually had, like, the TSA people and airline safety people, and it was going to come to about $1 million. And I look at that and say, well, what about all the people in the Midwest who are suffering from all of these ice storms we had and may not have electricity for 30 days? So it makes you kind of wonder if we're properly allocating the revenue, the paltry revenue that we do have, or the paltry discretionary income that these counties and cities and municipalities do have. And it just makes you kind of wonder, like, where are our priorities? And it's not to denigrate football. I understand everybody loves football. Are you ready for some football, especially in the Midwest, in the South? It's not as big here in the Northeast, especially in the New York City area. I went to high school in New York City, and when I moved to Atlanta and told people we didn't have a football team, they looked at me like I had three heads. And I'm like, well, where are we going to play, like in the middle of 6th Avenue? So I probably am saying this not fully understanding the magnitude and the power and the impact that football and the Super Bowl does have on American lexicon and American culture. But when you really look at, you know, when you really look at it, I'm saying to myself, that's a lot of money. And then you see people that don't have a home, people that are suffering from ice storms, don't have electricity, and we're spending millions on security to keep people safe. It just is a little disheartening. But let me switch gears. Oh, did I mention we have an amazing guest today? Oh, I would be remiss in sharing that with you. Today we're talking to life coach Gary Glasscock, who is a dear, dear friend of mine, great, great guy, great coach. We're actually going to partner on a couple of things, you know, tag team my core clients with his. But anyway, he's going to join us in a moment. Let me just get some more information, some hot topics out. Just want to read you something very quickly, not too long, but it's about Bank of America and how Bank of America is taking or is accepting the TARP funds, which is really considered a bridge loan, but look at how they're using it. So let me just get into this, and then we'll be enough with the football and Super Bowl talk, and we'll really get into today's guest. But it's just mind-blowing about the dollar value and the dollar amount of money that's spent, and then you look at all of the people right now that are losing their homes and have no money. So it's a little tough to swallow. But anyway, this is from ABC News. This report, which I'm getting ready to read very quickly, is from ABC News so that you know my source. Bailed out Bank of America sponsors Super Bowl Fun Fest. Morgan Stanley hosts conference at five-star resort in Palm Beach. Despite a near collapse that required $45 billion in federal taxpayer bailout funds, Bank of America sponsored a five-day carnival-like affair just outside the Super Bowl stadium this past week as President Obama decried wasteful spending on Wall Street. The event, known as the NFL Experience, was 850,000 square feet of sports games and interactive entertainment attractions for football fans and was blanketed in Bank of America logos and marketing calls to sign up for football-themed banking products. The bank staunchly defended its sponsorship, saying it was a business proposition, and that's in quotes, and part of its growth strategy. Critics blasted the spending as a serious abuse of taxpayer money. I don't know. I'll tell you my opinion in a second. Let me just read a little bit more. The prominent sponsorship of the Super Bowl says to the American people that we'll take your money, then we're going to go waste it, says Tom Schatz, president of Citizens Against Government Waste, a watchdog group. Leading congressional critic Congressman Elijah Cummings, just as a sidebar, I'll be speaking at his youth conference in 2 weeks from today. Congressman Elijah Cummings said they should know better, but obviously they don't. According to the Bank of America, the official bank of the NFL, its NFL partnerships and product tie-ins generate significant revenue streams. The bank said it was legally required to fulfill its contract to be an NFL sponsor and that its NFL product sales had already increased since the experience began in 2004. The bank refused to tell ABC News how much it's spending as an NFL corporate sponsor, but insiders have put the figure at close to $10 million. The NFL experience was on top of that and was inked last summer, according to the bank. Tickets were available for purchase between $12.50 and $18.50, with proceeds from ticket sales going to local youth initiatives. It was the 18th year for the Interactive Fan Festival and the first that Bank of America has sponsored it. So if you want to read more on that, feel free to go to ABC News. But, you know, I just felt it's kind of important to mention that, you know, Bank of America spent $10 million of taxpayer money, and this is where the dividing line comes. Do we live in a capitalistic society where when you hedge your bets, if you lose, you lose, instead of asking for American taxpayers' money, or if you're going to take our money and then be accountable to us. So it's a very fine line. So that's my rant for the day. I had to get that out because I was a little salty about that, just seeing these poor people that don't have money and don't have electricity and all these millions are being flung around like nothing. So that's my thoughts on that. I've got a couple more hot issues, but I don't want to delay bringing our guest on today. Just so everyone knows, you can download this show through iTunes when you get a chance, which my engineer does all the time. Big shout-out to DeWan, who's down in Atlanta. And the chat room is now open, so a big shout-out to everybody who's joining us in the chat room. I see Mika. I see Dropping Seed Radio. I see my friend Christine, who's with Child. And also we have a guest in the chat room, so big shout-out to everybody who's joining us. I hope everybody had a good weekend this weekend because I sure did. And, you know, on that note, let's get ready to bring in our guest. I'm excited, excited, excited. And just so you all know, I'm having chocolate chip cookies today. No strawberry cake and no brownies, but I am having chocolate chip cookies. But I'm only having one huge one, so that's just to follow up our New Year's resolutions on better eating. So on to our guest. Gary, are you with us? How are you? Uh-oh, Gary, are you there? Gary?
Yeah, hello.
Hey, buddy, how are you?
No, I'm doing great. Sorry, I had my phone muted where I had to cough a while ago.
Oh, we cough, sneeze, everything else on this show. Don't worry about it. We've got a great, fun, and interactive show. You're fine.
Well, I got a question for you about that chocolate chip cookie.
Yes.
Is it one of them great big ones that you get at the bakery that's the size of a pie?
Actually, it's, you know what, my husband yesterday, when he was shopping for snacks for the house, because everyone who listens to the show knows I absolutely love, like, cookies and brownies and cakes.
Mm-hmm.
He bought the Pillsbury, you know, when you just cut them and then you put them in the oven. But what
yeah.
I did was I cut a piece, put some walnuts on it, and then put another piece of dough on top.
Oh, a double chocolate chip cookie.
Yeah, man, that's going to be a good one. but I'm accountable to all of my listeners because we're all trying to eat healthy, so I guess that's my true confession, so that tomorrow when I get on the air and say I had a cookie, they're like, wait a minute, I thought we were eating better. Listen, it's good to have you on the show today. Tell all my listeners a little bit about you. Today we're talking about 5 steps to manifesting your life. This is a great show, a great topic, and when you and I started chatting some time ago, I thought it would just be absolutely wonderful to have you on the show, and there goes my cell phone. It never fails when I get on the air.
Well, as you said, my name is Gary Glasscock, and I am a Master Certified Life Coach and a Master Spirit Life Coach, and I just really help people improve their lives by assisting them in removing the blocks and barriers that are keeping them from living the life that they really desire to have. And, you know, there's several different processes and things that we do, and it's all personalized, just like when you're working with somebody, you don't use the same things with one person as you do another. You know, there might be some things that might cross over, but it's still pretty much individualized. And I had a really great thing happen this morning.
Good. We like that.
I've just started marketing myself locally. First of all, let me preface this by saying I live in a small town in the middle of Kentucky. I quit telling people I'm a life coach because people can look at me and say, "You're what?" the town is only about 14,000 people.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, they don't, most people, when you tell them what a life, you know, about a life coach, being a life coach, they're just at a loss. They don't know what that is.
Right.
So I quit telling them that, and really and truly, just a little marketing thing for people here. If you have your own business, when people ask you what you do, don't tell them what your job is, because that's what you are. That's not what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Think about what you do for people. What do you help them do? That's what you do. You know, yeah, I'm a life coach, but that's what I am. That's not what I do. What I do is help people to improve their lives.
Can I just interject? I am so happy you said that, because things that are instinctual to some people may not be to others. And I learned that many, many years ago. When you're out socializing or networking or in a social setting, never tell people who you are. You tell them what you do. And
mm-hmm.
You said it, and it's a refresher, because I'll be out and people say, "Well, what do you do? Well, I'm an author." But I change that. Well, I write books. And so there is a big difference, and it takes the conversation in a totally different direction. So I'm so happy you said that.
It does, because when I tell people that, then they start asking me more questions.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of getting this confused look on their face and looking at me and, "What's that?" You know,
mm-hmm.
then, "Oh, well, that sounds really great," you know, and then they start asking questions and all. And so that makes, you know, opens up the conversation more. And you know, when you're meeting people, you know, you're networking with them at that point, no matter where you're at. And that's what you always want to be doing, is thinking about presenting what you do in a way that people can grasp what it is and make it easy for them to understand, and also to develop more of a conversation with them so you can possibly get them to thinking about how they can help you as far as referring people to you, or maybe book a sample or introductory session with you, or things like that. You know, that's the whole goal when you're talking with somebody anyway, is to expand your network and hopefully get them to align with you to help build your business.
Well, what I was saying is I'm happy that you said that, because on this show, or the people that listen to this show, I have a lot of listeners who are self-employed. I have a lot of listeners who are ministers or work in the realm of spirituality, pastors, mm-hmm. and things like that. And it's so interesting to say that, because now I'm hoping that my pastors and my pastors' wives and people who are listening, and even, you know, I have a buddy on this show, big shout out to Dave, whose birthday was yesterday. Dave, that's a great tip for you, who is a videographer. And so instead of, you know, so if I said to Dave and I was out at an event, Dave, what do you do? What should he respond? How should he respond?
Well,
like I make memories or I video.
Yeah, that would I help people to preserve valued memories on videotape.
That's nice.
I help people to preserve valued memories on video.
I didn't mean to catch you off guard on that one. I just think that's a point that's so worth mentioning, because so many people that listen to this show have their own business or are marketers. And I always say, I say it probably two or three times a week, that we're all marketers of the solution that we offer. And so just, I know that's a little off topic, but just by you saying, you know, what you do and how you help people, hopefully that information can definitely help someone as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
well. Cool. Hopefully it will.
I'm sure it will. That's kind of what we do on this show. We help people. But now I want to get into a little bit. One of the reasons that I really wanted to interview you and have you on the show is in our conversations behind the scenes, I shared with you that I kind of help a particular age group,
mm-hmm.
30 to 45. Those are the people that kind of follow me, read my blog. But you have a totally different audience. Talk to me about your audience, and then we'll spend the second half of the show really getting into the steps on how to manifest your life.
Well, my audience tends to be the baby boomer generation. And that's who the majority of my clients have been. And also the majority of my clients have been women as well. So I guess, you know, by that then my target market would be women baby boomers. And one of the things that I help them with is, you know, a lot of them are at this time in their lives. They may be empty nesters, or that's coming along pretty quick, and they don't really know what to do with their lives because they have been so used to. And this is just a common thing I've found with women. They've been so used to taking care of everybody else and thinking about whatever everybody else wants and needs that when it comes time to think about what they want or what they need, they're at a loss because they're not used to thinking that way.
What are some of the challenges that you find that face baby boomers?
Well, a lot of it is just faith in yourself and faith and belief that you can do what you're wanting to do.
How do you think the economy in our current state has impacted people's confidence in themselves and confidence in their own abilities? Because I look at it, my dad, both of my parents are baby boomers. My dad is 58 and my mom is 55. So they, for many, many years, felt we're going to work hard, we're going to take our 2 weeks vacation, we're going to save, we're going to have our 401k, and that world has now crumbled around them. So just even dealing with people that are proprietary to that age group, how do you think they're adjusting, or do you think they're having a difficult time adjusting?
Well, it really depends on how they're looking at the perceived economic crisis. I say perceived because even in Time Magazine,
mm-hmm.
October 20th issue. They have a section in there every week. It's called Briefing, and under that they had a picture of Wall Street, and then they had a picture. And then underneath that it says The Moment, 10/6/08 New York, and it's talking about when everybody found out that the economy is supposed to be going in the tank. Well, whoever wrote this, I just want to read this real quick. It says, Financial panics, short-term acute market upheavals that often coincide with long-term recessions were common as the U.S. economy developed. There was the panic of 1857, the panic of 1873, and most relevant for us, the panic of 1907, which started when shaky New York City banks quit lending. We learned a lot from those scares. The Federal Reserve was created in the wake of the 1907 panic, and some believe we were too smart to panic again. But fear is and this is what I really want everybody to get here, these next two sentences. But fear is a persistent emotion, one embedded by evolution in our lizard brains. That's why there's no precise economic definition of a market panic. And this is the most important thing right here. It's more a psychological than a physical phenomenon. Simultaneously anticipatory, you think something terrible will happen, and retrospective, you think you have waited too long to avert a disaster. And so, according to Time Magazine, it's just like we as life coaches get people to see that really and truly, your reality is nothing more than your perception of what's going on around you. And that's what this guy's saying, that the financial crisis is actually nothing more than a group change in perspective of the economic, of the economy here in the United States.
But I have two things to say to that. I subscribed initially to that philosophy. I subscribed to, life is 10% what happens and 90% how you respond to it. Fear is just your perception of things. But then there's the actual reality that people are losing jobs, the actual reality that my thing of cookies yesterday was $3.99, where it used to cost $2.29. A big
right.
jar of mayonnaise used to cost $2.79, and it's now $4.29. That we can't perceive, we can't shift our perspective, because that's tangible and that really is changing. So how do we deal with the harsh realities that some things are brick and mortar, that some things are tangible? I ask because I did subscribe to, you know what, it's a matter of perception, it's how you look at it, it's how you handle it. But then the reality says prices are up, incomes are not stretching. You know, I put $10 of gas in my car, it used to fill it up over half, now it's barely getting me to a quarter. How do we handle those situations?
Well, first of all, you have to realize that these are all nothing more than manifestations of the collective panic, the collective perception that we have an economic crisis. Everybody that is in this collective has bought into that idea, and all these things that are now happening are nothing more than manifestations of this collective consciousness that is now perceiving that we do have an economic crisis. And yeah, these things that you're talking about, these things are the result of everyone agreeing on that perception of reality.
So it's kind of the collective conscious. We all agree that money is tight, things are tough, and now we're stuck.
And yes, and so everybody's been thinking this. People have been worried about losing their jobs and all this. And what's happening? Money is getting tight. People are losing their jobs. All these things that people were worrying about are happening exactly as they thought it would. And what has happened is, but you know, that those thoughts have been put out into the universe, and the universe returns to you what you put out. And this is what is being returned to everyone that has bought into this realization, you know, this perceived reality that the American economy is going in the tank, and along with it, the global economy. But yet, think about this for a minute. There's still people out there getting rich. There's still people out there buying $300 iPods. There's still people out there buying all sorts of things. Maybe not as many.
Right.
But there's still people doing it. There's still people hiring life coaches. There's still people hiring high-dollar life coaches. I'm talking about the ones that charge like $5,000 a month.
Right.
There's still people hiring those people. And there's still people doing all these other things that a lot of people used to do but don't now because of their perception. And, you know, there's only one force in the entire universe that we're working with, and that one force, and which, you know, a lot of people call it God, some people call it universe, some people call it source, whatever your name for it, it manifests what your thoughts put out. I mean, you know, we're all connected to this. And you know, even Jesus has said in the Bible that we are all, you know, we're all one. That you know, he even said that God and I are one,
right.
or something to that effect. And basically, what he was telling everyone at that point was that not only is he one with God, but we all are. And God is this magnificent creative force in the universe. I mean, look at what has been created from that all these years. Well, when we put these thoughts out into the this void or whatever you want to call it, this it's picked up and it's brought back to us in the form of manifestations. That's why people talk about visualization. You know, that's not the people, but us life coaches, we talk a lot about visualization,
mm-hmm.
affirmations, and things like that. And all of that is designed to get your thinking more away from the negativity and more towards positive thoughts, because you put those positive thoughts out, you get positive results back.
May I just read something in the chat room very quickly?
Sure.
A statement from True. It says, I heard FedEx. Hold on, my screen. Oh, my screen. Come on, screen. I interrupted and then my screen froze. It was something about FedEx not doing a commercial because they couldn't afford it. That's what it was. I heard FedEx backed out of doing a commercial because the price ticket was not one that they can afford for Super Bowl. There are a lot of people that are still spending money, but there are also a lot of people that I'm so happy we're talking about this, because is it life imitates art, or does art imitate life, or life is a matter of perception, or, you know, all of these little whimsical sayings that we have, perception is reality, or is reality your perception. All of those things play into it, because as a collective body of individuals, we're all looking at dire facts, or I don't even want to call it a fact, because a fact is definitely not even an absolute. But we're all looking at challenging situations and uncertainties of our jobs. And I know the church that I attended in Atlanta just said, well, just because gas is $4 a gallon, you just have to change the way you live and change your lifestyle and you'll adapt. But is it that some people just take it so hard that they can't adapt?
Yeah. That's exactly
tough.
It. See, life itself is nothing but constant change.
Right.
And those that don't learn to adapt are the ones that sometimes get left behind, because we have to learn to adapt. And, I mean, there's things that we have to adapt to daily.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, we have to adapt to changes in our schedule. We have to adapt to our child getting sick that day and throwing our life into a tailspin because of it. You know, there's all kinds of things people have to adapt to on a daily basis. And sometimes they get overwhelmed with trying to adapt, and that hinders them as well.
Well, I call my life consistently inconsistent. Because that's really what my life is. It's consistently inconsistent. I know what I actually wake up every day. Well, actually, before I go to bed at night, I do this about 10 or 11 o'clock at night. And I put together, it's called, I call it my daily roadmap. So the next day, I know what I need to do. So when I wake up in the morning, I'm not, what am I going to do today? What should I do today? I know between 6 and 7, I need to do this. Between 7 and 8, I need to do this. Between 8 and, you know, all the way through my day. And, you know, it's not done with such precision where I don't allow, you know, time for little things to, you know, take place, or for quick phone calls and things like that. But it never, ever fails. I'll wake up and there's an email, or I'll wake up and there's a fax, or I'll wake up and it's something with my family that throws my daily roadmap totally off. And that's why I say that my day is consistently inconsistent, because no matter how much you methodically plot and plan to have everything done in such a meticulous way, it almost never works out that way.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's I like that saying that your life is consistently inconsistent, because
mm-hmm.
that is right, because, you know, you do just like I said, you know, every day when we wake up, we have to adapt and we have to, you know, make changes in our lives. That's just exactly like a ship going on a cruise. As the ship goes on this cruise, they have a certain route that they follow, but as they go along, they might drift off course a little bit, so they have to make course corrections.
Right.
The same way with your life. You know, as you go through your day, you've got to make little course corrections to successfully navigate your day and your life. So, yeah, it is. I like that. Consistently inconsistent. That's pretty cool.
Well, thank you very much. Something that I just kind of looked at and said to myself, you know, I have always felt for many years that I was inconsistent. And I've been actually labeled at times inconsistent, because people, I'm very unpredictable. Nobody kind of knows how to gauge me. You know, I'll change plans at the last minute. But it's not that it's intentional. It's just kind of by virtue of the way my life goes. But before we start to wind down today's show, I want to get into the one of the core topics of today, which is the 5 steps to manifesting your life. Can you give us, start down with number 5 as to how we can actually start? Well, first of all, before we get into the steps, what does it mean to manifest your life?
Excuse me. I had to cough again. I like to mute. It's a habit I've gotten into when I cough. You still there?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay. It got dead on me for a second. I thought maybe I dropped the call.
No, I'm still here.
Okay. Now, number five.
Well, before we get into that, what does it actually mean to manifest your life?
Oh, yeah. What does it actually mean to manifest your life? Manifesting your life means learning to take control of your life and purposely set about getting the life that you desire by making the choices that you need to make and by taking the steps that you need to take, not nobody else, but just you, in order to achieve the life you desire.
I just took a bite of my cookie while you were talking.
Sorry about that.
No, listen to this. Yesterday, I found on Facebook a friend who I grew up with from a child. And she lives in Florida. And in our conversation, she said, I'll never move back to New York because I hate the cold weather. I love the weather in Florida. So I was so excited. My husband was watching the Super Bowl, and I ran in, and I said, oh, my goodness, I just found Kristen online. I'm so happy. And I said, one of the things she told me is she will never move back up here because she never wants to live in cold weather, and she will only live in hot weather, in a warm climate. And my younger son says to me, she sounds nasty. And I said, why? He said, well, who is she to think that she only can live in warm weather? And it dawned on me that even as a child, we have to explain that we create our destiny.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't even get, I said, she has made a clear line in the sand, or actually in the cement, that she does not want to live in cold weather. Her mandate in her life is she wants to live in warm weather. And he didn't get, and I was so happy, that's what I call a teaching moment, he
mm-hmm.
didn't get that we actually do have control over our life. And I said, well, why, if she doesn't want to live in cold weather, what would keep her living in cold weather? Why can she just not make the declaration, I only want to live in warm weather, and have it manifest in her life? And I'm saying this to a teenager. And it took him a moment to think, and I still don't know if it marinated because he was watching football, but is that what you're talking about manifesting your life?
Yep. That's exactly it.
Yeah, I believe that. I believe that. I absolutely believe that because she said, I'll never live in cold weather. So I guess that just means no matter what or to the best of her ability, she's going to try to, you know, live her life in warm weather. But now,
mm-hmm.
now that we have understand and we've wrapped our brains around the concept of manifesting your life, can you please share step number five?
Well, step number five would be to follow your intuition.
Oh, wow. Wow. Why?
Because your intuition will not lead you astray. Now, you may think it will. You may think it does. And sometimes you might think that you've gotten something from intuition, and actually it was just more or less a thought that come from ego.
Mm.
And those are the ones that, yes, those turn out wrong. But you have to learn, and it takes some people a while, but you have to learn to connect with that intuition and to really feel it and really listen to it, and not just mentally or listening to it as a voice, but also the feeling in your body that comes over you when that happens. You get a little intuitive thought, check in with your body. How does that make you feel?
Right.
You know, does it make you feel trepidatious a little bit?
Right.
Well, you know, then maybe it might not be what you need to be doing. That may have been a little bit of insight or a little bit of intuition, but that may, you know, you get that little sense of, well, sometimes, though, that's just nothing more than your ego coming up, just like the little man on your shoulder.
Right.
no, you don't need to do this. No, you don't need to do this. And this is really nothing more than the negative programming that you have allowed yourself to accept over the years. And but you've got to learn and you've got to really hone that skill of listening to your intuition and following it.
Well, I know for me, before I started understanding what intuition was and before I really accepted that that's God talking to me, I had to be able to discern and differentiate my voice versus that voice. And so now I've narrowed it down to when I hear something come through my left ear, I know for a fact it's God offering me wisdom, instruction, and direction, and I go with it without even thinking twice because, you know, I put my way is usually wrong. But there, you have to also develop your gift of discernment, because if you don't, you're never going to be able to decipher what's good and what's garbage in a moment's notice. So I do believe, and we have a lot of Christians that listen to the show, and we all know we have to be able to hear God's voice to be able to discern if we should move left, right, or just stand still. That's good. I love that. What's number four?
Well, there's one thing I want to add to what you just said.
Sure.
You talk about hearing it in your left ear.
Yeah.
Well, here's a little something for you. First of all, what part of your brain, what side of your brain controls the left ear?
I don't know, but I think it's the right.
It's the right. You're right. The opposite side of the left side of the brain takes care of the right side of the body. Right side of the brain takes care of the left side of the body.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
But now, here's what you'll find interesting. The right side of the brain is where consciousness lives.
Really?
Yeah.
Didn't know that. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
So now I know. So now that just validates my own belief.
Mm. Good.
That's good. That's good. Thank you for sharing that. What's number
you
four?
Number four, what the fourth step would be to I don't have these written down. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Use whatever your thought process is, whatever you remember.
The fourth step would be to be clear. And what I mean to be clear is to be clear about what you're asking for.
Mm.
Actually, belief would be number four.
Okay.
Be clear would be number three.
Okay.
So number four is belief. I mean, all right, this is such a powerful thing. Belief is actually what brings it all to you. Your belief that God, Source, the Divine, whatever your name for it, your belief that will deliver to you what you've asked for is extremely powerful. Just a case in point. People that go to Reiki, energy healers, or people that go to people that do the laying on of hands and things like that, these other healing modalities, if they go with skepticism and disbelief, they're wasting their time because nothing will happen. Nothing will be healed. Nothing will be cured because they don't believe. Now,
right.
You know, now if the person doing the treatment, they believe, so there may be a partial healing, but it won't be a full healing unless the individual that's being healed believes as well, because it's their belief that takes care of supplementing the belief of the practitioner so that you can become fully healed.
I subscribe to that.
And, you know, it goes the same way with everything else. If an old saying from Henry Ford. If you believe you can or you believe you can't, you're right.
Right.
And that's it. If you believe something to be true, it's going to be true. If you believe something to be false, it's going to be false.
Right.
If you you must believe that whatever you're asking for will be delivered unto you.
Well, that's true. I mean, I have read the comment by Henry Ford where it says if you think you can, if you think you can't, both are true, and that's definitely paraphrased. So I do believe you're absolutely right. What's number three? You said it's be clear. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Right. Well, this has this kind of has a double connotation here, because be clear is two things. One is to be clear about what you're asking for. Be specific. If you are asking for this is one thing that a lot of people may be looking for, and that is a compatible mate. And you know, you have to be clear on that. Just saying that you want a compatible mate won't get it. But you have to be specific in what it is that you're wanting in that mate. And now it's a lot easier for people to think about really and truly what they don't want. So that's why I tell people, look, list the things you don't, you know, if we're talking about a relationship, list what you don't want in a relationship. And then after we get done listing all those things, then we go back and we contrast those and change those into positive statements. For instance, one statement, some lady that I might be working with, she might have a statement of, you know, I don't want to be ignored. Okay, so we would change that around to where I want to be valued and respected by my mate, and I want to be my opinions to be taken seriously and all this. And so that's how we define that's how I help people define what they want in their life. But also be clear with your mind. Clear yourself as much as possible of the negativity, and this sometimes takes a lot of work. But,
right.
You know, you need to be clear of that, and you need to be clear and specific on what it is you're desiring to have in your life in order to manifest it. And I always, of course, that's sometimes easier said than done, but, you know, we do have to be specific. And of course, a lot of people say, well, no, you don't. You just got to wish and say that you want this. No. If you want something, if you want a blue Volkswagen Bug, then that's what you need to ask for, not that you just want a better car or you want a new Volkswagen Bug. No, you want to know what color it is. You want to know what color the interior is. You want all those things. And
pick
those things out and visualize it and all the detail as much as possible. You know, and for instance, if you were desiring to get a Volkswagen Bug, there's one little thing that's in those that are not in any other car that I've ever seen, and that's a little flower vase.
Right.
And so, you know, you would go so far as actually picturing that and picturing the flower of your choice in that vase.
I don't want us to run out of time, because we're down to the last few minutes. What is number two and then number one?
Well, number two is just, you know, be asking, and always be asking with gratitude. Always be asking with gratitude. In which that's number one and number two right there. You know, be asking because it is your choice. You have choice in your life. You always make choices, so make the choice to ask for what you want. And number one, gratitude. You've got to you've got to be grateful for where you are in your life, for the things that you have, and just for everything in general. You need to be grateful so that you can appreciate everything in your life. Now,
I totally agree with you. Yeah,
I'm looking for a little thing, fortune from a fortune cookie.
Well, you said you're looking for something in a fortune cookie?
Yeah, well, it's a slip that I've kept,
mm-hmm.
and it's talking about gratitude. I can't find it right now, but it's something on the... there it is. Gratitude is not only the greatest of virtues, but the parent of all others. And so, first we have to have gratitude, then ask for what we want, be clear on what we want, and be clear with our minds.
You're absolutely right. A friend of mine told me, I was getting frustrated a couple years ago why my business wasn't moving along, and my friend told me, Sai, you don't even know what you want. The universe can't give you what you want because you don't even know what you want. So now I try to be fully present in every moment and every day and stay focused and clear on what I want, because if I'm not, if I send out ambiguous signals, I can't receive what I'm looking for because I'm too ambiguous. You know, I can't send out gray stuff. I have to send out, this is what I want, this is my direction, with focus and decisiveness. So that way the universe can do whatever the universe is going to do. God can kind of get his hand in it and start mixing stuff up, and the things that are supposed to come to me can come to me. But I think we can't – well, you know, just for people – for when you go to church, they tell you, you can't go to God wishy-washy. You know, you have to know because of your faith and through your actions, through your tithing and through good stewardship, that you will be blessed in ways that you can't even imagine. But we're almost out of time, Gary. Can you just please give our listeners your website in case they want to get in touch with you?
Sure, sure. It's manifestingyourlife.com.
Okay, I'll put that in.
And my email address is gary@manifestingyourlife.com. And even if you wanted to, you can pick up the phone and call me. The number is 270-469-1445. And if I'm on the phone at the time, It'll go to voicemail, and just make sure you leave a message, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Now, one other little thing that I like to toss in for people when telling them about asking and being clear. As you're asking and, you know, for something, and you're getting clear on what it is that you're wanting and all, and you're being specific about it, always end your statement with "or something better."
Oh, nice. "Or something better." That's nice. A nice little way to end it. "Or something better."
Right.
That's nice. I like that. Gary, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today on Life Remixed Radio.
You've given us very good
information. So I appreciate it, and you and I will continue to have our conversations behind the scenes and, you know, during the course of the week. And if I, you know, come across anybody that needs your services, you know, we'll see if it's a good fit. So thank you very much, Gary, for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me, and it's been a pleasure.
Oh, no doubt. Absolutely. Everyone, thank you so much for listening. Tomorrow we're talking politics all day, and I'm working on an interview, everybody, to get Wonder Mike from the Sugar Hill Gang to call in on Friday. So it looks like it may happen. The only way it won't happen is if he's in a different time zone where he can't, because he's overseas. But I'm working on getting Wonder Mike from the Sugar Hill Gang to join us on Friday. So that will definitely be a treat. Tomorrow we're talking politics all day. I've got Big Sed joining me for that show. So it's going to be a good show. Remember, everybody, that we shall pass through this world but once. Any good, therefore, that we can do, or any kindness that we can show to any human being, let us do it now. Let us not defer or neglect it, for we shall not pass this way again. I'll see you all tomorrow at 12 at your girl, Sai Brown, right here for LifeRemixRadio.com. Peace.